pure and utter domination from the home teams in the first round of the college football playoffs. Did the college football playoff committee get it right? Plus, our thoughts and our reactions to all three games on Saturday on today's edition of the College Football Power Hour. Welcome into the College Football Power Hour. That's Adam Brenneman. He is Jason Fitz, and I am Caroline Fenton. And the first round of the college football playoffs are behind us. And those were games. Those games happened.
It was
those,
a game.
Those were four games that happened. There were games. So that's good. 4-0. Home teams were 4-0 in the first round of the playoffs. I just want to get right into it because I have a million different thoughts. We'll break down all three games on Saturday, but just kind of first some overarching college football playoff thoughts now that the first round of the 12-team playoff is behind us. Home teams were 4-0 in the first round. Notre Dame on Friday night, then obviously Penn State against SMU, Texas against Clemson, and absolute Ohio State butt whooping over Tennessee. Adam, my question for you. Is that just an overwhelming home field advantage in the first round, or the home team's just that much better than their opponents?
Yeah, I think it's a combination of a few things. One, I do think there's a huge advantage to having a home field playing in your home stadium in the first round of the playoffs. I mean, we've seen sports books for years have calculated that as like a 4 to 5 point advantage when they put out lines. It is a big advantage, especially when you have teams playing in cold weather environments. So I do think that that plays a major role. I'll also say this. I think that the purpose for the first round of a 12-team playoff or any playoff that is multiple rounds like this one is really to weed out the teams that don't belong there. That's what the first round is for. That's what happens in the first round of these playoff games. You look at March Madness, granted a lot more teams, that's what happens. You weed out the teams that don't belong. So I think that's an important part of this. Now, the bigger picture to this, Fitz, is that we have a college football system in a college football scheduling system that doesn't give us any good way to tell which teams are actually good and which ones aren't. I am not crazy. No one's crazy saying that Alabama, Ole Miss, South Carolina all would have been more competitive against Penn State than SMU would have been. But I don't think anyone actually thinks that, you know, look at an Indiana team. No one actually thinks that Indiana didn't belong in the playoffs playing Notre Dame in that game, but Alabama would have played Notre Dame better.
People don't believe Indiana should have been there.
But I think from a resume standpoint, though, at 11-1, Big Ten record, you can't leave them out is my point. But we have no way of having an equalizer when the SEC plays 8 conference games, Big Ten plays 9 conference games. You have no standardization across non-conference scheduling. So it's really hard to tell who actually belongs in the playoff and who doesn't. Combined on top of that, a flawed playoff system where you have first round byes going to Boise State and Arizona State and not two teams that actually deserve it. The combination of all that is that you get blowouts in the first round of the playoff, which still, I will take blowouts in the first round of the playoff over the 4-team playoff system that we've had the last few years.
Yeah, I think the seeding part of this is a big part. Look, the Grinch came and stole our first round of the playoffs, and that's going to be the whole conversation today, right? A lot of this is about how bad some of this was. But, Adam, I think the seeding is the one thing that's easily fixable. Because I just sat there and thought, you know what? What we're seeing right now are two of the best teams that should have been in a bye over the course of it. When you talk about three of the best teams, when you talk about the way they played, taking on three of the teams that you know, at least two of them barely belonged in the playoffs. So, and I'll go back to this conversation on Indiana and everybody else. Look, at some point, as I say all the time, the committee's job, everybody says, is it the best or the most deserving? It's the best of the most deserving. And if you really want the committee to start this slippery slope, I got into this raging debate last night. Cool. So what happens if a team loses the first 4 games of the season and then all of a sudden they go on a tear and they look like a different team and suddenly they are clearly so good that the committee at the end of the year is like, yeah, I know they're barely top 25, but man, I think that'd be a really good matchup against Notre Dame and they're playing well. So we're going to put them in the playoffs. Like this is a no-win situation. The fact is, this is going to happen. Just because we have 12 playoff teams doesn't mean we have 12 viable national championship contenders, because we don't. So we're going to get these ass whoopings every year in the first round. I just think there are going to be teams that qualify that get killed. And the presumption that Ole Miss, South Carolina, Alabama wouldn't have gotten killed presumes that each of them would have come at their best day. Tennessee, remember, we have seen really good from Tennessee and what happened to them last night. Why are we so sure that that wouldn't have happened to Bama, wouldn't have happened to South? It's convenient. It's just easy to say, well, that wouldn't happen. Ole Miss. Okay, the same Ole Miss team that, as we say on this show all the time, lost to Kentucky. Like, on their worst day, any team in college football can get their ass kicked.
Yeah, Alabama got blown out by Oklahoma. Yeah.
Exactly.
Right, and you could argue that what Alabama did to Oklahoma or did against Oklahoma is much worse than what happened to Indiana against Notre Dame or what happened to SMU against Penn State. And I think the idea is that Alabama's best day is better than SMU's best day. I think we can all agree with that. I don't think that that's a hot take in the slightest. Yep. The frustrating argument to me against that, because I was very pro Alabama over SMU, and I think that was met with a lot of pushback of, well, you just believe that because it's Alabama, and you just believe in brand over actual good football teams and records. And no, I don't. I think that's a very convenient argument because it's Alabama against SMU, a team that's largely been insignificant in college football over the last 25 years. The reason why I trust Alabama in the playoff and the reason why I trusted Alabama to make that game against Penn State a more competitive one is because we've seen Alabama compete against and beat some of the best talent in all of college football. I know that Alabama-Georgia happened a long time ago, but that still happened. And that Alabama team still exists. So that's why I believe that would have been a much more competitive game. Now, am I going to say that because the result was as lopsided as it was, not just in that game, but in all four games, is the reason why the committee got it wrong? No, because I don't think that that's necessarily fair. Lane Kiffin, who has a very convenient argument at the end of all of these games of, oh, well, we should have been in because these games were lopsided. Well, don't lose to Kentucky. Well, maybe beat LSU when you lead LSU for 60 minutes. Maybe don't run the exact same play on fourth down three times against Florida. That even though you should have won those games and you didn't, is not justification for you to be in the playoffs. So I think that both things can be true, Adam.
Yeah, without a doubt. And Fitz, I think what your point about, you know, the best of the most deserving is the important part here. And that those are the teams that deserve to be in the playoff, that should be in the playoff. So listen, we're gonna get first round blowouts in the playoff every year. It's just going to happen.
We've had first round blowouts in the playoffs every year.
It's nothing new. It's nothing new. It happens in every sport. I was quite frankly shocked at some of the results. The Ohio State Tennessee ending, the final score there, hard to believe. Did not think it was going to be that way. But listen, but all four of us, I mean, all three of us predicted the four wins. I think. I mean, Caroline, you and I agreed on almost all of them. I think you might have picked Tennessee
to beat Ohio State.
But still, it was a pretty easy to pick these four favorites to win. Everyone knew it was going to happen.
I will say, I think Tennessee losing was important. I think Tennessee getting their ass kicked was important for this entire conversation. If Tennessee loses an epic, close, last second, oh my God game, then everybody is going to continue to pile on the C. This is why you just got to, SEC teams know how to compete better. The fact is, of all of the butt whoopings we saw over the course of all four of these games, let's get this clear and not get it twisted. The team that got their ass kicked the most, the team that did not look like they belonged on a playoff football field the most, was the University of Tennessee, who of all of the teams got their butts kicked, had the resume and the skills and the team that should have been the most competitive game. That, if anything, is the living, breathing, eating proof that all of this is inexact. Because Tennessee, if Indiana would have gotten just railed like that, then we'd say, okay, Indiana. And that's what everybody was saying going into Saturday night. This was the game that was going to prove everything. And all that game proved is that, man, even a good SEC team that looked like they can be a national championship contender, that can go out and play with absolutely anybody in the country. What happened to them? They got rocked. And they got rocked in a way that was just, it was pitiful. Like, I wish they could have stopped the clock and said, stop this. This is hurting this front. Like, this was hard to watch. And that was Tennessee. That wasn't the Big Ten. That wasn't the ACC. That was the SEC. That was Tennessee.
And I find it ironic that the narrative has been that Indiana should be the one that didn't make the playoff when Indiana lost to Ohio State 38-15, Tennessee loses 42-10 in a college football playoff game.
That's a silly argument. We cannot use the transitive property in the sport of college football. We know how fickle and week to week this sport is. That I've heard that a lot. Well, Indiana played Ohio State closer than Tennessee did, so Indiana is a more deserving team in the playoff than Tennessee. That is the most anecdotal, smallest piece of evidence to make an argument about Big Ten versus SEC. Tennessee very much so deserved to be in the college football playoff. They played two top 25 teams, if not more, in Alabama and Georgia. They beat Alabama. They lost to Georgia, and it was a bad loss. They had a bad loss to Arkansas. But I think that what we've seen, the body of work that we've seen from Tennessee, they are very much so a college football playoff team. Indiana did not have the same body of work as Tennessee. So just because Indiana didn't get their butt whooped as bad as Tennessee got their butt whooped against Ohio State does not justify a committee's decision one way or another. It does not justify one conference being stronger than another. It doesn't justify Alabama being left out of the playoffs.
I don't think anyone's saying that Tennessee shouldn't have been in the playoff. The point is that the narrative should not be that Indiana didn't deserve to be in the playoff. And I disagree. I do think that looking at how Indiana played Ohio State versus how Tennessee played Ohio State, Indiana played Ohio State much better. It was a game at halftime. It was a game really the entire way until the end. And Tennessee ran off the field. I mean, it wasn't even close after Ohio State's first touchdown. They were never at any moment. Tennessee never had a chance to come back in that game. Where Indiana, that was a real game. I mean, it didn't go well for Indiana a lot of the times, and they ended up losing by multiple scores. But I do think that's a pretty good tell of how good a football team is. And I'm not saying that to say Tennessee shouldn't have made the playoff. I'm saying that the narrative around Indiana being the team that shouldn't have made the playoff, that to me is ludicrous.
One of the factors the committee is supposed to consider is transitive property, how you looked against common opponent.
It doesn't work that way, though.
But I know it doesn't work that way, but where do we draw the line on that, Caroline? Because I'm with you. I understand that any given Saturday. But if I'm not allowed to consider two teams that played the same opponent, then why am I supposed to sit here and consider anything about other opponents? Like, if transitive property doesn't exist because of any given Saturday, then why does it matter how Alabama looked against Georgia early in the season? Because any given Saturday, like, that's such
transitive
a blanket
property.
Argument.
That's something that actually happened.
Right. And
we
what
actually saw
happened,
on a field, right, Alabama beat Georgia.
I know, but we actually saw Indiana play Ohio State closer than we actually saw Tennessee. That's my point. Is like, I hear you, that I understand that every week is wildly different, but this is part of the process because it's so inexact, and it has to be part of the process because otherwise, you're right. We saw an actual win, and we saw a closer game from Indiana to Ohio State than we actually saw from Tennessee. So it is, in some weird way, transitive property is everything in college football because there is no like scheduling.
I think it's fascinating to consider too. What if Indiana played Ohio State 2 weeks after Ohio State lost to Michigan? Is that a different game? Because I saw a different Ohio State team on Saturday night than I saw against Michigan. I saw a lot of adjustments being made after that loss to Michigan, and we'll get into that. We'll get into the Ohio State-Tennessee game. But that's a reason why I think the transitive property is flawed. It's because week in and week out, teams look different. Teams can make adjustments. Sometimes teams get smacked in the mouth, and they realize what we tried didn't work, and we have to adjust. So I do want to get into, you know, recaps of all those games. We'll get into an Ohio State-Tennessee recap and what that loss to Michigan meant for Ohio State and their trajectory throughout the entirety of the playoffs. But let's start with the first game of the day on Saturday. Penn State absolutely clobbers SMU. And do you hear that? Does anybody hear that sound? Because I think it's the sound of Kevin Jennings throwing yet another interception. Three interceptions for Kevin Jennings on the day. Two of those were pick sixes. 21 of Penn State's 38 points came off of Kevin Jennings' interceptions. Adam, I give you the floor. If you would like to wave your navy and white pom-poms, if you would like to just, you know, walk your walk and talk your talk, whatever you'd like to do, the floor is yours. You are the resident Nittany Lion. Your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, listen, I think it was a great performance by Penn State. First of all, Beaver Stadium was electric, great atmosphere. It was really cool to see TNT come in there overlooking Happy Valley with the snow on the ground. I mean, that December college football game, playoff game in Beaver Stadium, it was electric, everything I thought it was going to be. You know, the thing I'll say is this. Penn State didn't look very good to start that game on offense. I mean, Drew Aller looked shaky. Penn State was struggling to run the football, but – man, did Penn State's defense step up in a big way. The two pick sixes, Tony Rojas, Dom DeLuca. I mean, that was the first 14 points of the game. I mean, the biggest play in the game to me was the Tony Rojas 59-yard interception return for a touchdown. Put Penn State up 14-0. Before that, Penn State was struggling on offense, could not score any points. Coach Franklin made a couple interesting decisions, went forward on his own 20-yard line, decided to go for it on fourth down and 13 at one point. I mean, there were some interesting decisions. And Penn State did not have momentum in this game and could not move the ball. And then they got the two pick sixes. I really think the first quarter, the first half, was more Kevin Jennings losing the game than it was really Penn State winning the game. But then I'll say this. I thought as the game went on, Penn State's run game really came to light. And you see the benefit of having a run game a lot of times really comes in the third and fourth quarter, where you can wear teams down. And that's what Penn State did. They ended up dominating on the ground in the second half of this game. And a healthy Catron Allen and healthy Nick Singleton, they're as good as any running back room in the country and as good as any team running the football in the country. They had three touchdowns on the ground. And I thought that the most telling drive to me, Fitz, was when Penn State was up, I think, two or three touchdowns. They went on a nine-play drive to seal the game, essentially, 75 yards, ran the ball all nine plays on the nine-play drive. It was like nine-yard run, six-yard run, 10-yard run, 5-yard run, had an explosive run, then run it in for a touchdown. I mean, that was when Penn State really sealed this game, and that's going to be the offense Penn State needs against Boise State, who's got a much better run defense, and is going to run the ball well himself. So I thought it overall was a strong performance for Penn State, but I think you look in the mirror if you're Penn State and you say, listen, we got a little bit lucky there with the two pick sixes, some bad decisions by Kevin Jennings, which really made this game a blowout when at times it didn't feel like it in the first half.
Yeah, I see that. I also think that's part of why a blowout was kind of predictable here. And one of the themes we saw over the course of the weekend is that, frankly, the team that won, the home team in every one of these, the better team, came out with a defensive pop that was just hard to battle back from, right? Like, there was a hit in the mouth from each of these defenses that won that I thought was pretty sizable. And then there's just such a size difference. Part of the reason we do sit here and say, man, Alabama would have been more competitive is you just start looking at the size of some of the human beings playing football. And as that game was wearing on, it felt like Penn State went back to Big Ten championship game Penn State. Hey, we're going to do – these runs are just going to be right up the gut. We're going to go right around the edge with that. We are going to force you to stop us. And I also think we have to remember, particularly – I've made this comment a lot over the last day. Go out with your best friend when it's really cold outside right now. Go outside. Just stand outside for 10 minutes. And after you've been standing outside, ask somebody to stand across from you and just slap you in the face as hard as you can. Then 30 seconds later, ask them to do the same thing.
It hurts.
When you are not used to the cold, every one of these hits starts to accumulate. They stack. And I feel like we felt that in this game because Penn State, in the second half particularly, was just not afraid. You know what? We're going to hit you and we're going to try and move the line of scrimmage 6 inches our way. And they did that throughout the course of the second half. So when Penn State runs football like that, frankly, for all of these teams, but when Penn State runs football like that, you see why they can be a national championship contender.
And I said this to Fitz last night, Adam, and if you feel differently, please let me know. I don't feel like I learned anything new about Penn State, I guess, against SMU. And that's not a bad thing in the slightest. I think, honestly, frankly, that's a good thing because Penn State has an identity that they are going to win football games and have won football games by running the football well and playing elite defense, forcing turnovers, getting after the quarterback, stopping the opponent's run. Penn State did that. That's how they beat SMU. And of course, they got a few favors from Kevin Jennings, but those points still count. And if they get that against Boise State, that still counts and that still can propel them to the college football playoff semifinal. So I didn't learn anything new about Penn State, but I almost think that that's a good thing. Consistency, stay true to who you are. It's exactly what Penn State did yesterday.
I thought of the four teams of the four winners of the first round of the playoff. I thought Penn State's defense looked the best. I mean, Tom Allen, Penn State's defensive coordinator, does such a great job of just confusing opposing quarterbacks. If you watch Penn State, there is never a time where their defensive look appears the same pre-snap to a quarterback in the same drive. Like, it always is changing. The picture is always changing pre and post-snap. It is really fascinating to watch how unique they are on defense. And the biggest thing that confused Kevin Jennings was really the pre-snap disguises, where Penn State was showing the two high looks, where Kevin Jennings thought he was going to have some underneath routes and then ended up rolling down into one high. Safety comes in the box, and one of the linebackers are able to make plays on the football with the Tony Rojas and the Dom DeLuca interception. So I thought that that disguise really confused a guy like Kevin Jennings. Add on top of that the pressure from Abdul Carter. And Tom Allen does such a great job of putting Abdul Carter, who's one of the best defensive players in the country, in advantage situations where he has a matchup. Abdul Carter plays defensive end, plays linebacker, plays nose tackle, plays defensive tackle, three tech. They move him all over the field. And that allows him to win one-on-one. A quarterback never knows where Abdul Carter is actually coming from. And then they have Denied Sutton on the other side of the field, who had a big sack in this game as well. Combine that with some of the pressure packages Tom Allen does. There's so many different things that Penn State does on defense, which then leads to the interceptions. It leads to quarterbacks being confused. And for Penn State, it's so much about every single snap, there's an illusion of pressure. You never know where it's going to come from. And Tom Allen is so aggressive out there and putting his guys in different spots. I thought it was a masterclass job by Tom Allen and completely shut down Kevin Jennings, who's been playing really well throughout the second half of the season.
Adam, you said two things I think that are important there, too, to drill down on. One, Abdul Carter, who's had an incredible year. When you do this in the playoffs, I mean, my guy just got paid. Like, it's just, he's just flying up draft boards. When you do this in playoff games, you fly up draft boards. I just kept watching and thinking, this is single-handed domination. But the other part of it is, I want to take a second and just step back a little bit on our conversation on Jennings, because it is easy to sit here and say, well, you know what, they got a gift from the quarterback. Those gifts didn't come accidentally. And that's a big part of what you just said that I think is an important thing to stress here. I don't have any reason to believe that that Penn State defense can't and won't do the same thing to Boise State, right? Like, I just, you have got to play quarterback at the highest level against this defense to have great productivity. And that's asking a lot. That's asking a lot. We talked a couple of weeks ago about the quarterbacks we can trust. There aren't a lot of them. I think one of the biggest advantages Penn State has right now is that defense, the way you described it, and the disguising of that defense tripped up Jennings. And as much as it's easy to say, well, had a bad game, threw pick sixes, those were earned. Those were earned pick sixes.
Yeah.
When you throw two pick sixes and three interceptions on the day, those aren't accidents. That's not just a bad day at the office. That's Penn State's defense putting constant pressure and forcing him into those mistakes.
I really think the best way to phrase it, to put a bow on this Penn State defense conversation, is just that Kevin Jennings felt like he was in survival mode all game. There was never a point that Penn State allowed him to like actually thrive out there or actually feel like he was the one hunting. He was just trying to survive. And that's what happens when you play Penn State's pass rush. They are a step ahead mentally. They have a relentless pursuit to the football. Never can get comfortable in the pocket. Tom Allen, in this game, it was a classic case of a defense dictating terms of engagement and really controlling the chessboard on the field. There was never a point where SMU's offense was in control of this game. So I thought it was cool. It's going to be interesting to see how they play against a team that's a little bit better at running the football like Boise State.
They're going to win by 20. We'll get into that.
We got plenty of time for that. But
you have some faith in some good playoff games, man? Come on.
Look, I'm a logic. I got no heart in any of this. I'm just logic. I'm the one that, you know, Adam, I told you that Penn State would win the first round by 20. I'm taking Penn State by 20 again. Go ahead.
You did.
I mean, what's the old adage? You know, when somebody tells you who they are, believe them. When the college football playoff shows you what it is, believe it.
Believe it.
But yeah, don't pick any other way. But last point I want to make about this game, Adam, Penn State goes for it on fourth down from their own 20-yard line. Oh, now, again, we're talking about the defense. They force another Kevin Jennings interception. They were kind of given a little gift at the Penn State, inside the Penn State 10. Yeah. How many four-letter words did you utter when you saw James Franklin make that decision to go for it on fourth?
Well, I actually said that. I said to someone that I was there with and said, they may go for this here. And I actually didn't really believe it, but I knew that, you know, again, I told you guys on the show, like, normally anything fourth and one is a go almost anywhere on the field in modern analytics in football, which is crazy to me. But man, That decision would be talked about a lot more if Kevin Jennings didn't throw an interception two plays later and SMU would have scored. I think it was like a 14-0, 7-0 game at that point. I forget exactly what it was, but it was close. And that was a wild decision. And also, I thought Drew Aller could have picked up the first down on that fourth down and one, but he fell on the quarterback sneak, got stopped. And I'll say this, if there's one area for concern for Penn State, I don't think Drew Aller played very well in this game. There are a lot of moments where he did not look comfortable. He got better throughout the game, and I think he'll be better in a warm weather environment. It's hard to play quarterback in the cold, no matter if you're home or away. It's a tough thing to do, but Penn State's passing offense was not very good. Only had 100-some yards passing, 50-some percent completion rate, which is not good. Only one explosive play throwing the football. Bad on third down throwing the football. So that's my area of concerns. We talked about Notre Dame's pass offense. Can they throw it vertically down the field? We didn't see a Penn State offense in this game that could throw it vertically down the field. Now, granted, because of the pick sixes up at 14-0 early in the game, they didn't have to. But Drew Aller has to play better.
James Franklin doing his best Dan Campbell impersonation there.
It's gutsy. Caroline, you didn't even mention the 4th-and-13 he went for. It was like 4th-and-13 in the first. But I guess it was because of the punting, the wind. It's like, yeah, that's your best chance.
That felt to me like the most I don't respect my opponent kind of decisions. And you know what? Like, I don't know what SMU did on Saturday to say that we demand respect. You have to respect us. James Franklin was like, well, you know what? We'll just make these decisions all willy-nilly and we're going to be better off because of it. And you know what? He was right. He was right. All right, quick break here. We'll get to the rest of the action from the college football playoff in just a sec. Texas takes down Clemson 38-24. One frustration I have a little bit about yesterday, and we did it, I did it, we're all guilty of it, kind of making fun of the splatterings that we saw on Saturday. The final score might not be indicative of it, but Texas and Clemson was a really good game.
Yeah.
It was a tightly contested game, and I don't think Clemson will get the credit for staying in this game as much as they did just because of the final score. But Fitz, the difference here was Texas can run the hell out of the football, and they are a much different team when they can run the football versus when they can't, and we saw that in the SEC championship game. And Clemson just not being able to take advantage of some opportunities that they had. They got the pick six that got called back for a blindside block. They got into the red zone. They got into Texas territory several times. They had to settle for field goals on at least two of those drives. But that's the difference to me. Texas, when they can run the football, looks like they can beat anybody.
So I'll disagree. Look at me, the disagreeer, on whether or not this was a good game. I felt like, look, I used to antagonize my big brother all the time. Like I would go in and like, poke the belly of the beast, and he would let me get away with it until he would kick the snot out of me. That's what I felt like was happening last night. Like Texas, I never felt like this game was in jeopardy. We talked about on a previous game, I think it was the Notre Dame game, that was like, hey, never felt like there was a moment where, oh, this wasn't going to turn out the way it turned out. I never thought Clemson put a serious threat to Texas. There were a couple of times
when
it got close.
Cut Texas's lead to 7?
Yeah, no. It felt like a Herculean effort where they were trying to run their way back into this game, and Texas was like, all right, here we go. If anything, in the second half particularly, Texas's defense, I thought, was guilty of taking the foot off the gas. There were a couple of drives where I felt like they just fell asleep. And now I'll give Cade some credit. Klubnik had some beautiful passes on the one drive where they watched right down the field. That was fun to watch. And I thought, man, when Clemson's kicking on all cylinders, this is fun. I don't think they ever really seriously threatened Texas. And so you get the worst of what you're going to get from Quinn Ewers, frankly, with the injury and just the fact that I don't think Quinn was great in this game. And Texas still absolutely dominated the game to me. So, yeah, I agree with you. When they run the football like that, they can beat anybody. I never felt like this was a threatening game. This was a go check your lunch during the middle of it because you know that you're not going to miss anything. Like Clemson's going to get beat.
Yeah. Yeah, I was really impressed with Texas's offense in this game, more so than I've been at any point throughout the season. And you mentioned Quinn Ewers, Fitz, saying he didn't play that well. I thought he played good enough to win, and I thought he played good enough to win a championship. When Texas runs the football the way they run the ball, they ran it in this game, Quinn Ewers doesn't have to be Superman, and that's when he's at his very best. I thought the combination of Texas dominating on the ground, averaging 6+ yards a carry. You'll win almost every game you play if you average 6 yards a carry running the football. the combination of that run game with Quinn Ewers making good decisions and having the balance in offense. When you have a guy like Quinn Ewers playing quarterback who, no matter how he plays every snap, defenses have to respect it, it doesn't allow teams to load the box to stop the run. So, you know, and then when he makes the timely throws, like the touchdown to Golden, like some of those plays, it keeps a defense honest. It keeps Clemson's defense from being able to load the box to stop the run because they have to respect Quinn Ewers as well. And it also led to Texas being great in the red zone in this game. That you look at red zone efficiency, that's normally one of the most important stats, the most telling stats in a football game. Clemson scored almost every time they're in the red zone, 4 or 5 in the red zone, came away with 24 points inside the 20. Clemson, on the other hand, left points on the board, and Texas' defense was good in the red zone. That was another big telling point in this game. I thought Texas's offense looked really good, looked efficient. Their physicality up front was evident, man. Their offensive line, one of the best in the country. Clemson's defensive front just could not handle Texas's physicality. And it's the reason I just saw the odds have Texas as the favorite to win the national title right now, I think because of the way their offense played in this game.
Texas has the best odds to win a national title right now?
Yeah, this morning. Jumped Oregon. On some book. I mean, you know how fluid those things are, but I just saw it. True.
Yeah. I do think it's interesting because this now you bring this up. And by the way, you're right. Quinn played well enough. I think for me, some of the throws are a little scary. And I also think, as they mentioned several times in the broadcast, that ankle is an issue, right? So, you know, let's see what he looks like when he gets
Fitz, you're tough on quarterbacks, man. I mean, you're tough on him. It's like the John Gruden quarterback school, the Jason Fitz quarterback school over here.
I am tough on quarterbacks.
Quinn Ewers puts up 38 points against Clemson. He didn't play good enough for Fitz.
Fitz is significantly less terrifying than John Gruden.
He put up 38 points. By the way, I am not. I can't make the mean face like Gruden can. There is a theme here. And look, I know I feel like you can take a shot every time I talk about if you can run the ball and stop the run, you're going to win football games. But there's another theme that sort of came out of this weekend, because you mentioned Texas's defense playing as well as it played. The team with the best unit on the field, whether it's offense or defense, clearly won every one of these games. Like, if you have one, I've got this one thing that is better than you. Like, so yes, for me, Texas's defense is a big part of why I said I don't believe Clemson was ever really in this football game, because it felt like whenever they actually clamped down, it was like, nope, this driver not going to let you move it. And there was no answer for it. I don't know why they didn't in the second half keep that same level of intensity drive to drive. They'll figure that out. But man, the Texas defense is the reason that I feel like Texas should get a lot of respect here. And when they run the football the way they did, we also though have to admit that this was a glaring difference. Like, this is what Texas couldn't do in the SEC championship game. So, you know, as much as we talked earlier in the show about week in and week out, how different things look, somebody explained to me why the hell Texas couldn't do anything to run the football 2 weeks ago. And now all of a sudden, they're just juggernauts. It looked like they are able to do whatever they want. I know the opponent makes a big difference in this, but I was surprised to see them run the ball as efficiently as they did after they did so poorly in the SEC championship game.
I think it could be two things. One, Clemson's defensive front is not Georgia's defensive front.
Yeah.
And I think the other thing is they were without their left tackle in the SEC championship game, who is probably the best left tackle in all of college football and will be a top 10 pick in the upcoming NFL draft, Kelvin Banks. Didn't have him against Georgia, did have him against Clemson. So I think that's the perfect mixture of two things, of a lesser opponent and you are just better on the offensive line. And that gives you, you know, the most beautiful little baby of Texas's run game. But the reason why I'm so shocked that Texas right now has the best odds to win the national championship, you know, Adam, you bring up, if Texas can run the football like that, Quinn Ewers doesn't have to be Superman, and you're right. I don't know if Quinn Ewers can be Superman. Like, I don't know if Texas can depend on Quinn Ewers to not make mistakes. You know, he can look great at certain times. He can deliver beautiful footballs like he did to Matthew Golden in the end zone. But I don't think they can ask him to be Superman. And I don't know if you can win 4 consecutive playoff games, which is what you have to do to win a national championship, if you cannot depend on your quarterback to be Superman.
Yeah, I mean, it's a good point. I think also you look at some of Texas's playmakers on the outside. Like, do they have enough talent on the outside to really go win one-on-one consistently when they have to? You know, you think about Texas's run game against Georgia and why it struggled so much compared to the Clemson game. Texas runs more than any other team in the country I've seen. Really, they stick with their inside run game, and they're not pulling a lot of offensive linemen. They're using double teams at the point of attack, the guards and centers, double teams inside, and isolating their tackles one-on-one like Kelvin Banks and letting those double teams happen inside. The way to stop that is to have great interior defensive linemen, and that's what Georgia has. They have great defensive lines, so they were able to stop that run game. So will Texas be able to run the ball like that throughout the playoff? I don't know. What we saw against Clemson was impressive, but Clemson's interior D-line got depleted by the draft this past season. And Peter Woods is now their best defensive lineman inside, and he was taken out of the game. So if Texas can't run the ball like that, that will put a lot of pressure on Quinn Ewers to make big plays. When I think about Quinn Ewers, I think about a guy that makes good decisions under pressure. He's got elite arm talent. He has poise and efficiency in big moments, and I trust him. Now, we have not seen him have to go be Superman yet, to your point, Caroline. So that's the unknown. There's always an unknown if you haven't seen someone do something before. And then you talk about the talent Texas has out wide, I mentioned. I don't know if I believe that Texas has enough playmakers on the outside to be able to throw the football consistently, even when everyone knows they're about to throw the football. This isn't an Ohio State-type offense throwing the football. They don't have Jeremiah Smith and Emeka Abuka like they do. They don't have the talent outside like that. Granted, they have some good players. I mentioned Golden. But can they win games if they have to throw the football, if someone can stop their run game? That's my concern as well.
Yeah, but real quick, I'll say on that, sometimes the bracket matters, right? Like, their next matchup isn't going to give them a defensive line like Georgia against Arizona State. And then if things go chalk, they take on an Oregon team after that. We'll see how that matchup goes. But they would take on an Oregon team that we watch get gashed by Penn State in the Big Ten championship game with the run game. So I'm looking at it saying we might not even get an answer to any of this until a national championship game appearance, which would be staggering. And it is staggering just when you talk about it, Adam, how similarly we're talking about Texas and Penn State right now. Like, I trust their defense. I wish they had slightly better weapons on the outside. I'll give Warren, obviously, his flowers here for Penn State. The quarterback, not sure if we can say they got to run the football. Like, we're having the same conversation about both of these winning teams so far, and they're both national championship contenders. Yeah.
And Fitz, the bracket is the reason Texas is the odds-on favorite to win the title right now, because they have Arizona State next round.
Yeah.
And then they play Oregon. I mean, that's the reason where Oregon and Ohio State have to play each other. So that automatically makes their odds go down right away. So, I mean, it makes sense when you think about the bracket, why Texas, after what they just did, is now leading the odds to win it all, which I don't know if I would have thought that after the SEC championship game.
Let's go to Columbus.
Oh, boy.
Because there was a murder there on Saturday night. It was a heinous crime. There were children watching Ryan Day. Ohio State wins it 42-17, and 7 of those Tennessee points really came in garbage time. It was like that Chris Paul meme that was from, like, a screenshot from a YouTube highlights, and it was like, Chris Paul hits a clutch 3 to, you know, cut the deficit to 42 points. Like, that, like, it was a heinous, heinous crime that we saw in Columbus on Saturday night. Adam, I will give you a little bit of a trivia, a little bit of a pop quiz.
Oh, boy. I'm not good at trivia.
What does the Michigan-Ohio State game have in common with the first quarter of the Ohio State-Tennessee game? Jeremiah Smith had 5 catches. That's what those two things have in common. That it feels illegal that Jeremiah Smith only had 5 catches in that Michigan game, and he got 5 in the first quarter alone, including a touchdown against Tennessee. That was the difference in the Ohio State team that we saw on Saturday night versus what we saw in the Shoe 3 weeks ago.
That was gonna be my guess, and you didn't give me enough time to answer.
Oh.
No, I'm just kidding.
But you should have been quicker.
I'm just kidding. I know. My guess is going to be something with turnovers. Listen, I love that piece of trivia, Caroline, because what it shows is that Chip Kelly learned from his mistakes. In the Michigan game, Chip Kelly tried to show that Ohio State was going to be the more physical team and be able to dominate in the running game, and just stuck to it all game. Where then he didn't get his outside receivers involved. The biggest mismatch on the field every game Ohio State plays is their skill position players, is their receivers playing in space. In this game against Tennessee, and since that Michigan game, it has felt different. And Chip Kelly got his guys involved early in this game, which was great to see. I thought Will Howard was efficient in the passing game, one of the best games we've seen Will Howard play, and he's not played that well in some of the big games. He didn't play well against Michigan, had some mistakes against Oregon. I thought it was really good to see Will Howard step up, go 24-29, threw for 300-some yards, two touchdowns. He got the ball out of his hand. He played point guard back there, and I thought he played the best game that we've seen him play. And then the explosive plays. I mean, Ohio State had 9-10 explosive plays in the passing game of 15-plus yards because they have those elite receivers to get the ball to. So I thought Chip Kelly did a really nice job with this plan of learning from your mistakes and then not allowing your best players to not have the ball in the biggest games. But Fitz, I thought that this Ohio State team felt like one that, man, played with a little bit of a chip on their shoulder. I think the combination of Michigan losing that game to hearing everyone talk about, you know, how Ryan Day's on the hot seat, how Ryan Day doesn't belong there, how they can't win the big game, then to go into their own stadium and see 30 to 40,000 Tennessee fans in orange in their own stadium, I think gave them a little bit of a chip on their shoulder, and they came out and played fast and set the tone early in this game. You look at the opening drive, going down and scoring 7 points right away. I mean, they were in control of this from the very start.
After all of the things that have been said about Ryan Day, I want to point out how professional and adult it was that at one point he didn't just look at the camera and give a double bird to the world, because we have been screaming, like, everybody said, oh, he's going to get fired. I mean, this thing was absolutely a clinic. It was embarrassing for Tennessee. It was stunning. You mentioned I'm tough on quarterbacks. Let's just take a second and talk about Will Howard ball placement in this thing, because, my God, he had those corners on skates. They couldn't figure out what was coming. When they were trying to make plays, they were interfering with the ball because they were in bad position. Like, they were shell-shocked. It was so clear that Tennessee did not expect that to be the game plan early on. They didn't have an answer. And I was consistent all week. The one thing I said, and I'll be honest, I picked Tennessee in this game because I needed an upset somewhere. I was like, maybe Tennessee.
We appreciate the honesty.
Yeah, look, 100%. But here's what we knew. And this was all week. The biggest thing to me, I kept saying, is Tennessee's only path to victory is to be able to run the football and control the pace of the game. If they cannot do that, if they fall into a hole early, this thing is over. Their offense is not built to survive this sort of game. And what do you know? You blink and the damn thing's 21-0. Like, it was, you just, from the outset, I think Ohio State knew the same thing we were talking about, and they came out and said, all right, let's just murder them early and kill their spirit, and they did. Instead of killing their spirit with physicality, which is such a way that some teams like to do it, Ohio State came out and said, you know what, we'll just prove that you can't run with our weapons. And my God, when Will Howard plays like that, when those weapons are utilized like that, when the running game, which is such a huge part of Ohio State, it can be an afterthought in the way that you're just absolutely getting it on the field at will, but that looked unbeatable. That was the best of the best that we've seen from Ohio State, and by far the best performance we saw over the weekend.
It was a reminder, to me at least, and I think a good portion of America, that the last time that they saw Ohio State was just looked very lackluster against an average at best Michigan team of, oh yeah, there's NFL talent from the top to the bottom of this roster. Like, oh yeah, Ohio State is one of the best teams in the country. And I think that we would be remiss to not mention a lot of the injuries that Tennessee suffered in this game. Oh. I mean, Dylan Sampson got two touches. Like, you're not going to win any football game, much less a college football playoff game, against one of the best, if not the best, defenses in college football, when the guy that has gotten you to this point is too banged up to even touch the football. And they also lost Squirrel White in this game. Tennessee had several receivers in the transfer portal who didn't make the trip. So it felt like from the beginning, this Tennessee offense was doomed once Squirrel White went down and once Dylan Sampson. I think the broadcast said it was a hamstring. So once they got banged up, it really just felt like it was insult to injury for Tennessee. But just look at the first quarter. But I don't think that the injuries were the difference for Tennessee. That 100% Skrull White and 100% Dylan Sampson would have been enough for Tennessee to make this an interesting football game. Because just in the first quarter alone, Ohio State, 205 yards and 21 points. Tennessee, minus 3 yards. Will Howard, 10 of 12 for 160 yards and a touchdown. Nico, 0 for 4. Tennessee's leading rusher in the first quarter was Nico Iamaleava with 11 yards. Like, that's not the difference of just a healthy Dylan Sampson. I mean, Will Howard had a reception in this game before a single Tennessee receiver did. I mean, it's crazy. It's wild. And it's a reminder that Ohio State 1000% absolutely is a national championship contender.
Yeah. I can't believe that Michigan was the last game Ohio State played before this one. Doesn't it feel like that was so long ago that we were talking about Michigan-Ohio State game? I mean, a lot has happened since then. It's crazy. I mean, just think about the sour taste in their mouth they had for the last, what, month since that game. They clearly took it personally. Watching the Ohio State-Tennessee game, I was, you know, I talked about some of the coaches that have done a good job, and I talked about Chip Kelly, but I thought that the game within the game Chip Kelly was playing in this one was one of the best I've seen him have. And I want to give him his flowers because we were very critical of him in that Michigan game. I thought how he leveraged tempo and spacing to get his guys the ball on the perimeter, and Will Howard's ball placement, beautifully put fits, like it had to be perfect, and it was in this game. But Chip Kelly created mismatches all game long, up tempo. They were playing fast. Then they were huddling and mixing their tempo to confuse the defense. And one thing Chip Kelly kept doing was using that up tempo attack to force Tennessee into their base coverages. When a team plays fast on offense, at times you don't know when they're going to play fast. Your defense usually is stuck in their base personnel and their base coverages and base defense because they don't have time to change it. And that then allowed those one-on-one matchups with Ibuka and Jeremiah Smith and Trayvon Henderson even out in space to make big plays happen. And Will Howard executed the RPO game so freaking well. I mean, he's so good in that where he can make a quick decision, get the ball out of his hand. Playing quarterback in 2024 is more about playing like shortstop in baseball than it is about really playing drop back quarterback. And that's what Will Howard's so good at. Getting the ball out quickly, RPO game. Chip Kelly had a great plan on this one. And man, I mean, I said this on this show before, Ohio State is a legitimate contender to win the national title. I haven't seen the odds on the Oregon game yet, but I would be surprised if Ohio State's not favored in that game.
I will say, sticking on the Chip Kelly portion of this for a moment, there are very few moments that even casual fans that don't know the game the way you know it, Adam, can look at it and say, I see a coaching advantage. And for me, yeah, I always look at it and say, scripted plays. We all know the first 15 to 20 plays, you know, that you have a plan that you're coming in for. Tennessee's script, game script, no matter how the injuries went for the course of the game, Tennessee's game script on the outset was bad. Ohio State's game script from the outset was aggressive and beautifully executed. And you want to just talk about looking at it and seeing, you see the palpable effect of the coaching, the palpable effect of what was obviously a focused week of practice. Like, they came out just with the energy and execution of that game plan. I thought that was staggering. And those are the moments you step back and say, hey, let's pause all of the conversation, because when coaches do things that we hate, they make decisions in games that we hate, we are the first as a society to rip them apart. Let's take a second and just acknowledge that it's the Ohio State coaching staff. As much as the players on the field, Ohio State's coaches kicked Tennessee's coaches' ass in that game.
Yeah, and I just checked it, Fitz, on BetMGM, Ohio State 1.5-point favorites against Oregon, which is kind of remarkable if you think about, after the Michigan game, would we ever think Ohio State was going to be favorites against Oregon in a playoff game?
Could be a little bit of recency bias, since we just saw a dominant Ohio State performance against what is a very good Tennessee team. Like, this is, like, Tennessee is not in the same conversation of should Tennessee be here, kind of like how we're talking about SMU. No, Tennessee very much so deserved to be in the college football playoff. So it might be a little bit of recency bias, but it also might be a little bit of Ohio State is actually just a very, very good football team. Quick break here. Powerhouse, power outage coming up next. Okay, powerhouse, power outage on the College Football Power Hour. Adam, who is your powerhouse?
My powerhouse, I thought about this. I think I have to go with the home environments in round one of the playoff. You look at Texas, you look at Ohio State, you look at Penn State, you look at Notre Dame on Friday night. Those were electric environments. And there were rumors that they weren't going to sell out, that the fans weren't going to travel, that, you know, it was going to be too cold for some fans to go. Man, that was an incredible, incredible environment in college football across the board. And I think it's such a good sign that, man, that's what makes college football so special. Those types of environments. Ohio Stadium, the Horseshoe was rocking and gave Ohio State an edge early in that game. The Texas faithful were alive and well in Memorial Stadium. And it was a rough environment for Clemson to walk into, and Cade Klubnik was never comfortable. You look at Beaver Stadium and the pictures of Kevin Jennings holding his helmet tight to try to listen to his coach in his headset. I'm like, man, you don't want to do that, because as soon as Beaver Stadium sees you put your hands on your headset that you can't hear, it gets even louder. So I thought that the home environments in college football were remarkable. It reminded me of what makes this sport so special. And despite the blowouts, despite the talk about the playoffs structure being wrong, this and that, all the negativity, that's what college football is all about, the home environments. And I think we need more of them than just the first round.
Oh my god, yeah. Like, look, there is inevitably on New Year's Eve and New Year's Day, those games are going to feel so stale compared to what mm-hmm. we just experienced. The thought of right now getting Ohio State at Oregon, that to me, oh my god, yes,
come on. Like Austin, I mean, Stadium, come on.
That for a playoff matchup, that is just absolutely, that's what we want, that's what we crave, that's what we need. And I understand money makes all of this difficult, but I also think that when we start to see, and it'll take a little time, the trickle in of the TV ratings and the conversation around college football, you know, one of my things that I do also is a Fox Sports radio show, and we were talking about it on Saturday morning. We spent the entire 4-hour show on a national radio show talking about college football. And there were two significant NFL games. Like, when does the NFL get buried? It got buried because these games were at home. And to your point, like, just the fact that we were getting home playoff college football games, absolutely, I need it in the next round. And I also think, to your point, what we saw was something that's going to be preached in every locker room for every week next year. Hey, every game matters even more because, my God, the 8-9 game does possibly look different if it's not in Columbus in freezing conditions, right? Like, that's going to be the preaching point for every coach, is that, wait, we got to get the home playoff game.
And I was on record saying that I felt like there was a little bit too much being made of the weather in Columbus. Obviously, Ohio is much colder than Knoxville, Tennessee. I understand that. But I thought, it's not going to be the biggest swinging point in this game. And it wasn't. But it very much so, I think, was a factor. But I think the overall winner of the weekend, we can make so much of the debate about the College Football Playoff Committee. Did SMU and Indiana deserve to be in, or did they not? But I think we can all agree, the home playoff environments were awesome. The Penn State wideout, the Ohio State band member who was boo-hoo crying before the game as they dotted the I. Yeah. And I knew someone that was in Columbus last night, and they said, like, the Ohio State fans were absolutely positively nuts. And that's coming from a Tennessee fan. Tennessee fans are absolutely off the rockers insane. So the home playoff environments were awesome. I want more of them. I want second round home playoff games. That was the best part of the day for me, Fitz.
You have just opened my eyes to something, though, because as much as I was ready for power outage, I was ready to give the entire seating process the power outage out of this. But can we be honest for a second? If we were looking at Arizona State and Boise State as our playoff atmospheres for the first ever first round of the college football playoff, if we're being honest, it would not have hit as hard. We wouldn't be sitting here talking. Like, part of this is that we were at Penn State. We were at
the
Texas.
The Smurf turf,
like,
doesn't do it for you?
We were. I mean,
I don't know, man. I think it would. I mean, Arizona State would have that place rocking.
No, but casual, like, if you're barely a college
casually
football fan
rocking.
And you're hanging
casually
out.
Casually rocking?
No. Like, but if you're just walking through and you're like, it's a Saturday, what's on TV? I don't know that what's on TV? Oh, yeah, the first ever round of the college football playoff game. There's the playoffs. There's a game at Arizona State.
Good point.
But when you're like, oh my God, there's a game at night in Columbus and it's a playoff game. Like, I do think that part of what Sneaky got right here is that even though we all hate the seeding on this show, the seeding gave us landmark destinations for the first playoff weekend that I'll never forget. Like, we're going to answer the trivia question for years of where were you on the first weekend that there were home playoff games in college football. And that's just, now, I think that's part of why Tennessee fans flocked to Columbus. It's not just that it's Columbus and it's close and all these things. It's like, this is the first. Like, this hit different because of the teams involved.
I don't think you're giving Arizona State fans enough credit. I remember that BYU game. I remember that watching for all college football fans across America when they rushed the field a second too early.
You think that people, just your casual, like, Hey guys, I don't want to go Christmas shopping this weekend. I want to sit home and I want to watch playoff college football. You think your random, barely follows college football fan is flocking to the bar? Because like every bar last night was packed with people watching that Tennessee-Ohio State game. Do we really believe that Boise State at Arizona State would get the same draw? I do not. Like
it would not get the same draw. No, because games at Notre Dame and at Ohio State in the playoffs, like those right. are the things that we dream about. It wouldn't be the same, but I still think it would be awesome. Obviously not the same, but Fitz, I defer to you. Power outage for the weekend.
Look, there's some candidates for power outage because you can, we've absolutely railed into Jennings. We've railed into Nico. But I'm going to go all the way back to where this show started for the weekend. My power outage, the one person that, because you talk the talk the way you talk at Kurt Cignetti, when you get beat off the field that way and your coaching decisions are part of it, power outage goes to Cignetti in this one. Like, it's also easier for me to pile on a coach than it is to pile on a kid playing quarterback. I don't care how much money they make. So, you know, I for me, just some of the coaching decisions in a game that was never really at risk, but to me, could have been a lot closer if they had done some things differently. Adam, I will take Cignetti yeah. as the power outage of the weekend.
Yeah, and you can tell coaches in college football are starting to get annoyed with Kirk Cignetti a little bit. I think some coaches were happy that he lost that game because they were sick of hearing him talk that talk every single week. Did you see the post-game handshake between Marcus Freeman and Kirk Cignetti?
No.
It was very, very brief, and Marcus Freeman did not really seem all that thrilled about interacting with Kurt Cignetti. And I mean, listen, I think you guys know, like, the college football head coaching club is kind of, it's like a good old boys club that you don't really rub things the wrong way. You don't go on TV and start talking smack. You don't, like, you just don't do that. And I think if you're going to go on College Game Day pregame and you're going to talk about how you're going to beat the piss out of Notre Dame, you can't go lay an egg and then, you know, have some bad coaching decisions and punt on fourth down and three and you know, not basically not put your team in the best position to win. So I like it. It's a good pick there, Fitz.
Honorable mention real quick, Adam. Honorable mention, yeah. Lane Kiffin. You weren't even in the damn thing, and you're sitting there talking your talk. I know he's posturing for the future playoffs, but my God, if there was a mute button yeah. for Lane Kiffin, the world should hit it now.
But you don't get to whine and cry and bitch and moan on Twitter when you lost three football games. I'm sorry. Like, last year, if Mike Norvell wanted to whine on Twitter, I think that everyone would be like, you know what, Mike? We've got your back because you went undefeated yeah. and you still got screwed out of the playoffs. This year, Lane Kiffin has zero right. I don't think he has zero ground to stand on to say, well, yeah, these playoff games were bad and we should have been in them. No, Lane, beat Kentucky. Yeah, beat one of the worst offenses in the SEC on 4th and 7.
He has time to tweet because he's not coaching this weekend.
Because he's not playing.
You have time to tweet because you ain't doing anything. Go.
Shout out to Joel Glatt, though, who quote tweeted one of Lane Kiffin's many whiny little tweets and said, well, if you coached as good as you tweet, you'd probably be coaching this weekend. So
that was good.
I tipped to Joel Glatt good. There. All right, that's going to do it for us today. Always appreciate y'all for stopping by the podcast. So like the podcast, rate, review, subscribe, tell all of your friends, tell all your Tennessee friends, because I think they probably need a little bit of good in their lives today. We'll be back on Saturday night and Sunday morning with a full recap of all of the action of bowl games. We'll look ahead to the college football playoff games coming up next week as well. Everyone have a very Merry Christmas, very happy holidays. Love on your people. Enjoy your time at home and with your families. Be nice to one another all the time, but especially this time of year around the holidays. We are out.